Good morning and welcome to Peyto's fourth quarter and year-end 2013 results conference call. In the room today with me, we've got the entire Peyto management team, consisting of Scott Robinson, our Chief Operating Officer, Kathy Turgeon, our CFO, Dave Thomas, our VP Exploration, JP Lachance, our VP Exploitation, and Tim Louis, our VP of Land. And then, of course, we also have Jim Grant, our Investor Awareness Rep, with us, and he's got a whole load of questions that have come in. So, Jim, why don't we start with those?
Okay. For those of you who are new to our conference calls, we hold the first half as a question and answer session where I ask some of the senior management questions about Peyto and its latest financials before we turn over the call to questions from investors and representatives of investment businesses. Darren, with a substantial growth in reserves and an even greater growth in production, we seem to have jumped into a very sweet spot coming into strong winter pricing. However, looking back over 2013 from the helm, what do you think stands out as our greatest accomplishments?
Yeah, Jim, 2013 was a great year, a record year for us. And yeah, we grew production, we grew reserves, and now we've got gas price coming on, so I just love it when a plan comes together. We didn't quite plan the gas price, I guess. But we had a really great year, so it's a nice triple whammy we've got going on right now with gas prices getting stronger and our production so strong and having such a good reserves year. You know, from an accomplishment standpoint, though, I don't want to really point to one individual well or one individual play area. I think, you know, from my perspective at the helm of Peyto, our best accomplishment this year was reacting to the change, reacting to the volatility. You know, we came into the year, our drilling program wasn't really delivering exactly what we wanted in terms of the top returns that we're looking for. We reacted to that. You know, we're paying attention, looking at the results of every single well as we move forward. We had to have a huddle and rejig some things. We redirected some capital. We allocated some capital in a different direction, changed our drilling program out a little bit, and came out of breakup and had a really successful back half of the year. You know, I think it's that nimbleness, that ability for us to change gears and change direction quickly, react on the results we're getting, so that we're always generating the best possible returns we can. We're not locked into any particular program necessarily. We can always change on the fly. And, you know, we reacted as well to gas prices on the fly this past year. We had that whole Trans-Canada issue this past summer and into the fall, and we made some sort of audible calls reacting to that. We did a whole bunch of compressor maintenance then when we knew the gas price was going to be low. We held back a bunch of new production that we were going to bring on so that we could get a much better price for that. Rather than sort of plow through, not changing, not reacting to how the environment was, you know, we're such a small, nimble company, we can still do that, even though obviously we're not so small anymore from a production standpoint. But I think that's probably our biggest accomplishment in the year, is just maintaining that nimbleness, just being able to do that. I know there's a lot of producers that aren't able to do that.
Right. Turning to our Chief Operations Officer and VP of Operations, Scott Robinson, while we have little control over the overall market for our products, we do have control over our costs. Can you tell us how 2013's operating costs compared with previous years? And where do you see that going as we start 2014?
Yeah, Jim, I guess in a nutshell, our cost structure through 2013 did remain solidly intact at the top of the pack in terms of being a low-cost producer for the whole year and for the fourth quarter, for that matter. We continue to stick to our strategies and our competencies. We're drilling in concentrated areas. We're adhering to our principles of facility ownership and responsible maintenance programs, looking after those facilities. And, you know, all of that adds up to our low cost structure, which kind of follows those strategies. And if we look back over the last 5 years, period during which we've been drilling horizontal wells, our unit operating costs have ranged from about 30 cents to 40 cents. There's seasonal variations here or there, but averaging about 36 cents over that entire period. And we put a 35 cent operating cost on the board last year. So we're right in line, and we certainly would expect that to continue.
Okay, now turning to Tim Louis, our VP of Land. In our 2013 fourth quarter and year-end results news release, we spoke of $6.4 million in new crown land leases and $2.5 million for tuck-in acquisitions. Can you give us an overview of what land rights we have added in 2013 for this nearly $9 million?
Thanks, Jim. The $6.4 million you referenced was for acquisitions at Alberta Crown land sales. In 2013, we acquired 49 sections at Crown sales. A significant portion of these Crown sale purchases were in the Brazeau area, where we picked up 23 sections. The balance of the land sale acquisitions were spread throughout our existing core areas of Sundance, Medicine Lodge, and Wild River. With respect to the other $2.5 million spent on acquisitions, this was for two asset deals in the Brazeau area. This resulted in the addition of 26 net sections. So when combined the crown sale purchases with the two asset deals, we spent a total of $8.9 million to acquire 75 net sections. On a corporate basis, Peyto held a total of 664 net sections as of December 31st, 2013.
Okay, thank you. Turning to our CFO and VP of Finance, Kathy Turgeon, while our net debt has increased, and in general, as the company has grown, that has been an ongoing process, our interest costs for MCF have been decreasing steadily over the last 5 years. What factors are contributing to this? Can we look at this and say that we're growing faster than our debt is?
That's correct, Jim. In looking back over the past 5 years, both our net debt and our average debt outstanding has been increasing, and yet our interest expense per MCFE has decreased from a high of 41 cents per MCFE in 2009 to the current 24 cents per MCFE. Part of this decrease is due to decreases in stamping fees, which is a component of our interest costs. These fees are charged by the bank, and they increased quite significantly after the 2008 financial crisis and have been falling ever since. However, most of the decline in the interest cost per MCFE is in fact due to the fact that our production is growing faster than our debt.
Well, thank you. Now, turning to J.P. Lachance, our VP of Exploitation, we've been developing horizontal wells for over 4 years now. What have we learned about the optimal approach to well length, completion stage length, frac fluid type, and frac stage treatment size? Have we arrived at the best combination of these variables?
Well, Jim, the short answer is it's still evolving, especially as we push into new areas like Brazeau or move into tighter formations like the Middle Flare. Certainly, having drilled over 300 horizontal wells during the last 4 years, we have a sizable database to draw on. Last year, we drilled longer horizontal laterals on average than in the past, and in some species, we increased the number of frac stages considerably. But we continue to tweak frac sizes and fluid systems, but we're not making fundamental changes to a system that's been working for us. Generally, we're seeing positive results in production performance from these changes, but the goal is to optimize value, so we have to look at the whole picture. Now, for example, the short-term gain in initial productivity of a well by adding more stages or bigger frac sizes may not add value if the costs to get it are too high or the production improvement's not sustained. And the implied cost savings or increased productivity of longer horizontals may be offset by the increased operational complexity and inherent increase in risks of drilling, completing these wells. So all in all, we think we've made some positive changes, but we'll continue to take a measured approach to our well designs on a species-by-species and area-by-area basis. You know, as Darren said, we always look back at our results, and we'll continue to watch for technology improvements in the industry as well.
Okay, JP. We speak about our activity to date in 2014 in our Q4 and year-end news release. Can you elaborate on that for us? What has been going on so far this year?
Yes, Jim, we're busy with 9 drilling rigs running and up to 5 completion packages following in behind. We've rig released 7 Wilrich, 3 Flares, 2 Cardiums, and 4 Blue Sky wells so far in 2014. We're currently drilling in our South Ansel area, following up on our success in that area from last year. We have a rig running in the Brazeau area to further develop and extend that play. The remainder of our rigs are drilling in our core Sundance area. We also installed a key piece of pipe in January from our Wild Hay plant south to the Pedley area, allowing us to bring on some exploratory wells from last year. And this will also serve as an outlet for follow-up wells being drilled by a rig working in that area now. We also have pipe projects underway that will help to connect our 7 gas plants together in the greater Sundance area in a way that will allow us some increased flexibility to direct gas where there's capacity and mitigate downtime during outages when that capacity is available. Compression was added to our newly constructed Old Man North plant to match our process capacity of 50 million a day, which will accommodate drill activity going on right now. So all in all, Jim, so far in 2014, capital activity is on track and results are meeting our expectations.
Scott, In the fourth quarter and year-end results news release that came out yesterday, we speak about maintaining activity through the breakup period this year, with some caveats about access and weather conditions. Can you elaborate on these plans and their dependencies?
Yeah, Jim, at times in the past years, we have had varying levels of drilling and completion activity during that traditional April-May breakup period, ranging anywhere from a planned complete shutdown, as we had last year, to running a few rigs through part or all of the breakup. Last year, as I mentioned, we chose to remain idle. If you recall, when we went to resume our activities in June, it was rather wet, flooding in Alberta, particularly Calgary. And that wet weather took a two-month breakup period and turned it into 3.5 or 4 months. So we learned a little bit from that. This year, in order to provide a little bit of operating flexibility, we are positioning ourselves so that we can stay active during the breakup period if conditions warrant. In order to do that, we're lining up some preferred access for single and multi-well pads in appropriate places off of main roads. We're working with those road owners and putting into place special access provisions. We're lining up supplies as required. Of course, all of this will still depend and will be dictated on how the weather plays out, and we'll have to wait and see on that, but we're hoping to run anywhere from, say, 2 to 7 rigs through part or all of breakup, depending on, again, on how weather cooperates.
Okay, thank you. Turning to Dave Thomas, our VP of Exploration. Dave, will we be keeping up the proportion of exploratory drilling we saw in 2013 in this 2014? How do we anticipate this affecting our future drilling inventory?
Jim, we do plan to keep up a robust level of exploratory drilling in 2014. Especially considering we now have infrastructure built at Pedley and Brazeau. In 2013, we drilled a couple of strong Notikewin wells at Pedley, which JP, as he's mentioned, we've now built a pipeline to tie those in. So in 2014, we'll be following up this success with 7 additional wells to test the Notikewin, the upper and middle flare targets in this area. Some of these wells are planned as very long laterals. In our North Brazeau land, we've had success with the Wilrich, and we've now built a gas plant. So in 2014, we plan to continue with additional tests targeting the Wilrich, the Notikewin, and the Falaire. In South Brazeau, we've just finished drilling and testing a Wilrich exploratory well in February. We're quite pleased with the results, and we'll be back later in 2014 to follow this well up once we've built a pipeline to tie the well back into our Brazeau plant. At Edson, on our open range acquisition lands, we've just finished drilling and are currently testing our first Peyto-operated Blue Sky horizontal well in the area. The test is looking quite good, and we plan to drill an additional 4 Blue Sky wells at Edson later in 2014. At Ansel in 2013, we drilled our first Cardium and Falaire wells to complement our Wilrich drilling program. Both of these were successful, and they'll be followed up in 2014 as part of our 13-well drilling plan for that area. Obviously, a key benefit of having a deeper target such as the Blue Sky or the Wilrich to pursue is that in a multi-zone area, you essentially get a free look at the shallower zones as you plan to drill for deeper ones. If you're careful where you place your surface leases, you can prove up additional shallow targets as you drill through them in the build portion of your deeper horizontal wells. So Peyto has been pretty successful at doing this for a long time, and often when you look at a Peyto surface lease, you find multiple horizontal wells targeting multiple different zones. So we've for some time pointed out that each new well we drill tends to generate additional new drilling locations. So seeing as Peyto plans to drill over 43 deep Wilrich wells plus an additional 11 deep Blue Sky locations in 2014, and with continued careful consideration of how we site each of our wells, we anticipate another strong year of inventory additions that hopefully will be recognized by our independent reserves auditors.
Okay. Tim, given that spot prices and the front month prices for natural gas has risen sharply already this year, have we seen any impact of this in our ongoing land acquisition activities?
Jim, I would say the rise in natural gas prices has not impacted Peyto's ongoing land acquisitions. We continue to be successful at crown sales, Since the beginning of this year, we've acquired 18 sections. Although the industry welcomes this near-term gas price increase, if you look at the price forecast for 2015 and beyond, they really have not increased significantly. And this long-term outlook for gas prices is somewhat reflected in the crown sale activity this year. If you compare the first four crown sales in 2014 against those of 2013, and this comparison does not include oil sands dispositions, you'll see that the number of parcels posted is down by more than 20%, and the amount of land posted is down by 50%. So consequently, the bonus paid by industry at crown sales thus far in 2014 is down by almost 40% when compared to the same period last year. Although the average price per acre has increased slightly in 2014, this number is being skewed by the average, by the higher prices paid on parcels where the Montney is the primary objective. So it would appear that most companies, including Peyto, are still taking a disciplined approach at crown sales. So therefore, this should allow Peyto to continue its land acquisitions at a somewhat reasonable cost.
Okay. Scott, given the same comment about rises in prices in the spot market in the front months, just what proportion of our production gets the AECO monthly pricing? What proportion gets the daily pricing?
Our current production is running about 400 million of sales, which if you translate that into a energy content is about 450,000 gigajoules per day of production. We're selling about 390 of that to the monthly index, which equates to about 92% or 87% when you take royalties out of it. So we target around 90% for that monthly index. We always have, when we're growing production like we are, we're chasing a target. The monthly index we have found over time performs superior to the daily index. And we have the luxury, owning our facilities and controlling the destination of that gas, we have that luxury to be able to commit to that type of a firm arrangement. Obviously, over the last couple of months, the daily index has been performing quite well, but the monthly usually catches up with that, and this particular month is an example of that. So, yeah, we're running about 90% in answer to that question. For hedging, not related to that question, but of interest as well, we're looking at about 60 to 62% of our production having been entered into a financial hedge position at this point in time.
So, Darren, we seem to be getting closer and closer, maybe more quickly than we planned due to product pricing increases, to being able to fund record-breaking capital spending from our funds from operations. How is Peyto evolving as it approaches new milestones of productions, funds from operation, and capital spending?
Jim, I know, yeah, that's a question I get a lot. You know, people talk about funding sustainability, and what they're really asking is, you know, are your cash inflows capable of funding your cash outflows? The problem is that most people look at it on a short-term basis. They look at it, in a one-year plan or something, and they say, gee, your cash flow isn't sufficient to fund your capital program, so you're offside. But, you know, we've never really looked at it that way, and I don't think it's appropriate that we look at it that way. Peyto's the lowest cost producer in the industry. We have a huge advantage over many of our competitors and can be very counter-cyclical with our investment strategy as a result. So it's only going to be natural that we're going to outspend our cash flows likely in the bottom parts of the cycle, and have the reverse happen, actually, when we're at the top parts of the commodity price cycle. So you can't really look at us on a one-year and say, oh, gee, you know, you're not balanced between cash flow and capital programs, or cash in and cash out. If you look at us over the long term, though, which I think is more appropriate, maybe over a commodity price cycle of 10 or 15 years, you see that we are actually very balanced. You know, over our 15-year history, for instance, $3.5 billion of capital program has been almost funded with cash flow. We had $3.1 billion of cumulative cash flow. So, I mean, that's what you're looking for long term, no question. I mean, that's how you make the growth and the value creation really accretive to the shareholder. I mean, if you're funding, obviously, with debt or equity, then it's not nearly as accretive. But if you're funding with cash flow, then it's most accretive. And, you know, over our history, we've paid back almost as much to our shareholders as we've paid back more than we've ever borrowed from them in terms of equity raises and even a bunch of our debt. So reality is we've funded almost all of our capital with our cash flow over the long term. And I think when you look at Peyto over the long term, over the next 10 years, for instance, that'll be the same. But it may not add up in any given year. Some years, I think, we'll make more cash flow than we spend in CapEx. Those are probably high commodity price years. And in low commodity price years, it'll be the reverse. We'll be aggressively investing, and we won't be making as much. But that's fine. That's okay. That's really how you create that value for shareholders in an accretive way. So, you know, that's a strategy I think we're going to continue with.
Okay. So at this time, I'd like to turn the call over to questions from investors and representatives of investment businesses.
We have a question from Harry Chernoff from Pathfinder Capital. Please go ahead.
You always compare your operating costs to the peer group very, very favorably. Could you compare your FD&A costs to the peer group?
Yeah, we do that too, Harry, when all the numbers finally come in. And we do it for all categories, not just 1P and 2P. I know the industry tends to focus on the 2P number quite a bit. The danger that I found with everybody focusing on that 2P number is that the industry's been booking a lot of undeveloped, higher and higher percentages of undeveloped over the last several years with these resource plays and the identification of maybe larger amounts of resource potential. But it tends to skew the true underlying year-over-year finding costs, I find, because you've got massive amounts of future development capital that eclipse the annual capital programs that are being deployed. So we tend to focus our shareholders a lot on the comparison of proved developed producing FD&A costs, which it's a critical look for sure, just looking at the 1 year, and you need to probably look at that PDP FD&A cost each year for a few years to get a sense of trends, whether there's an exploration cycle or a facility, biggest facility investment or something in there. But that's where the rubber hits the road, because at the end of the day, the PDP reserves are the ones that are on production generating cash flow. There's performance information. You've spent all the capital to get that reserve developed, and so you know exactly what it is that you've spent, and you know what it is that you've got. And what we find is when we compare our PDP FD&A year over year to the industry, we compare very favorably. We're usually one of the leaders in the industry in terms of our true finding, development, and acquisition costs on a PDP basis. When you look at it on a 2P basis, we look like we're just sort of average of the industry, nothing too spectacular. We don't stand out so much. But remember, the true up, if you will, in the process is when you get to PDP. That's where a lot of the corrections happen between the undeveloped reserves and the developed reserves. So if you've, for instance, booked an undeveloped reserve, a barrel that you can develop for, say, $10 a BOE, but you really spend $20, well, then when you get to the PDP, that's where the true up happens. And so oftentimes, if you compare PDP FD&A to 2P FD&A, you find there's a big bust. I mean, many companies will have $10 2P FD&A, but then they'll have $20 PDP FD&A. And that's because they've underestimated the capital or the resource that they're going to get developed for that capital in the undeveloped category. But not very many companies point you to those numbers. They like to just talk about the 2P number with all that undeveloped in it.
Thank you.
Thanks, sir.
You mentioned you're seeing technology improvements by the industry in terms of completion techniques, and I think you can point to a few of your competitors around you. Is there anything that you're seeing that you would like to see, or what you guys would like to try on some of your wells this year?
You want to?
Yeah, JP? So, Jeremy, we're always watching what our competitors are doing as well as the rest of the industry, but, you know, we notice a lot of companies go into tighter spacing, and we're like I said earlier, we're taking a measured approach to that. I think it makes sense in certain plays, but certain species, but not all. For example, different completion fluids or techniques, yeah, we're watching that. We're making modifications, but we've got a system that works pretty good right now, so we don't plan on making major changes there unless we see something coming up.
Some of the downhole equipment is continually being refined to allow for more stages or more reliable stage isolation, and we're always watching that and allowing others to test drive it before we embark in using it within our own operations. So
Yeah, we're just mindful of what others are doing and what their cost structure is in doing what they're doing so that we can pick up any new ideas. To specific answer to your question, do we have anything specific for this year? I don't think we do, but our eyes are open and our ears are listening to what's happening out there.
And we've had some, Jeremy, we've had some experience too. You know, we've been pushing obviously longer laterals. We've been in some specific zones trying more stages. And we're finding, you know, there's some positives and there's also some negatives. I mean, when you get, you know, maybe 15 to 20 stages in one horizontal lateral and you're using a Packer isolation system like we do, that's a lot of balls you're dropping and a lot of very small, very fine tolerance ports that you're going through. It doesn't take a lot for those mechanical systems to have problems or to fail on you or to not work the way they're supposed to. So in some cases, you almost have to discount a little bit the effectiveness of going longer and longer. It's not a one-for-one gain because the operational execution risk increases. And so, you know, we found that ourselves even, that you know, sometimes friction losses along that long horizontal lateral don't allow you to get a stage or two of the very toe pumped in. So then what was the point of drilling it if you can't get it completed or get it fracked, right? I mean, it might look good from a total depth perspective, but if you didn't get that part of the reservoir stimulated, then you still have to drill another well. So, and you know, as Scott mentioned, the industry's definitely still evolving and we're still sort of pushing some of the limits. And even if you can get the well completed, you know, you still got to think about maintenance into the future. I mean, it's all great when the well's producing, you know, 10 million a day in the first week of its life, but what happens when that well's producing 300 MCF a day? You know, are you going to be effectively draining those reserves way out at the toe when now we're down to the matrix permeability that's feeding in, and can you really draw down 2 kilometers away from your vertical wellbore? So, you know, again, back to JP's comment earlier that it's all about the returns here at Peyto. So, you know, we're not focused on the IPs. We don't get anything out of IPs. We're not focused on the first month rate and being the guy with the top wells in the province on a 30-day measured rate period. As long as we're the top guy on the province from a rate of return on our capital perspective, then we're happy.
Right. Okay, thank you, guys.
You bet. Thanks for the question.
We have no further questions registered at this time. I'll turn the meeting back over to Mr. Dane.
Okay, great, thanks. There was one question that came in just before I came in here, and that was one about breakup. And I think Scott talked a little bit about our plan for breakup and the fact that, you know, we've seen so much wet weather coming out of breakup that it almost makes sense to drill through breakup before we get into that wet weather. That's hurt us in the past few years anyway, more than even trying to be busy through the breakup period. You know, I'd echo that too with the commodity price forecast that we're seeing. There doesn't seem to be a lot of belief in the back end of the curve. It drops off pretty rapidly from this high mid $4 range down back into the mid $3 range. However, should gas prices continue to remain stronger and should that back end of that curve come up more, that could potentially start to put pressure on service costs. We talked a little bit about that earlier. And I think it would make sense then for us to try and get more done sooner in the year, if that's the case, so that we're taking advantage before the rest of the industry wakes up to the gas price. So I think the strategy to try and be very active through the breakup period is a smart one from a couple different perspectives. So it makes sense for us this year. Anyway, thanks for listening, and I recognize this is a really busy week for releases. There's a lot of conference calls going on this week. Before we sign off, though, I want to send out a big thank you to our Peyto team here. You know, 15 years is an incredible milestone for any company in the Canadian oil and gas industry. There's not many companies that still exist today that existed back when we began in 1998. Or if they do, they're in a completely different form from what they started out as. And yet Peyto here is exactly the same as when we started. We have the same strategy. We're working in the same areas. Our goals are identical to the day we started, which I think really makes us very unique in the industry. And that's all, you know, a result of the dedication of the Peyto team that we've had over the last 15 years. I've been with the organization for 12 now, and we have many of the same people that have been with this organization for a decade now, and it's due to their commitment, a commitment to driving shareholder value and to delivering shareholder returns, that we've done so well. And that commitment obviously isn't going to change. So it's amazing and exciting, the journey we've been on for the last 15 years and where we've come from. And so to think about where we might go over the next 15 years is equally as exciting. It would be unbelievable to look forward 15 years at this same strategy deployed for another 15 years, where we might be. It's just really quite an amazing ride. So thank you again to all the Peyto team for all their dedicated hard work, and thanks to our shareholders for staying with us all those years. I think the rewards for everyone have been pretty amazing. So that's it. We'll be back to you with the first quarter results in May, and we'll have hopefully some more exciting things to tell you about our drilling program for the first quarter. Thanks again for listening in.